Welcome to KUOW Speakers Forum. I'm your host, John O'Brien. In this week's episode, Kevin Powell is a prolific author, activist, and entrepreneur. He came to fame in 1992 as an original cast member in the MTV reality program, The Real World New York. But he went on to earn acclaim for his writing for Vibe and Rolling Stone magazines and for his many books. Powell's latest work is The Education of Kevin Powell, A Boy's Journey into Manhood. About his impoverished upbringing in Jersey City, New Jersey, he says,
I think about the fact that for the first 18 years of my life, I never had one positive male role model. Not one. You know, there's some young people that I've met out here in different parts of the country. Even if I can only speak for them for 3 or 4 minutes, I'm like, that's more than I ever got when I was a kid. You know what I'm saying? And so we should not take for granted, gentlemen, how important it is, particularly if these kids don't have fathers, that you actually represent a father figure just by the fact that you're a grown person. And even if they're not your biological children, they're still your children.
Powell credits his mother for making his life, quote, rich in other ways, for his ultimate success and dedication to public service. He is a co-founder of Building Knowledge Nation, an organization that uses grassroots activism to prompt community projects and conversation. Among a wide range of subjects, this talk and dialogue addresses diversity, racism, gentrification, classism, gender and sexual identity, economic justice, the failures of our education system, and being Black in Seattle. Local participants include MC Davida Ingram, poets Nikita Oliver and Leja Farr, Trey Maxey, Tariq Abdullah, and Giassi Ross. The Seattle Public Library hosted this community event on December 12th. Thanks to Amy Tweedo and SPL for our recording.
As I've said in some of the radio interviews that I've done here in Seattle, this is the hardest book that I've ever written in my life. This is my 12th book, but it's the most difficult because it's an autobiography, it's a memoir, literally going from age 3 to my 40s where I'm at now. And it's like literally doing therapy on yourself. Are y'all with me out there? And it's not easy looking in the mirror because you got to really talk about some very painful stuff that you may have experienced in your life. But I really believe that if we're going to move forward as a people, as a human race, as communities here in Seattle, New York City, all around this country, given all the craziness out there, I mean, I don't know about y'all, but it's like I almost cringe now when I turn on my computer and go to the news because I'm bracing myself for more violence. Are y'all with me? You know, there's clearly a lot of hatred and fear and division out there. And one of the things that I wanted to do, and I said to Amy and to Davida and the folks who put this together, I mean, I could easily say, you know what, let me have a book reading, and let me stand here in a very boring way and read to y'all, you know what I mean, and then please buy my book. That's, you know what I mean, that's what a lot of us do as writers. I've done that. But, you know, if you buy the book, that's great. If you don't buy the book, that's cool, too. What I'm more interested in is, like, let's use the book as a tool to bring people together. And clearly it worked because y'all are here. You know what I mean? And that's what we've been doing around the country. I'm literally going to go to all 50 states over the next 2 years to have these kind of conversations. Not because I think I have all the answers, but I've literally been doing this work as an organizer, as an activist since I was 18 years old, since I was a youth just like y'all sitting in the front row. And I'm so committed to justice and equality for all people. I don't care what your race is, your gender identification, your sexual orientation, your class background, religion or not, ability or disability. We've got to get past all these isms and divisions and understand that we really are sisters and brothers out here. Can y'all feel me for a second? You know what I mean? This book, the youth poet laureate, where did she go? She went to the bathroom, okay. But she touched my heart because, you know, I was raised by a single mother. The book is dedicated to my mother. I say that my mother is the first teacher and the first leader that I ever met, you know. And I'm so clear that even though my mother may not call herself that, you know, she also is a feminist, you know. She is a very powerful woman. And the book starts with her, you know, in the introduction, and it ends with her when I say that at the last line of the book, I'm doing it, Ma, I'm doing it. I'm so clear I would not be here if it wasn't for my mother. You know what I mean? And no offense, fellas, I love being a man. You know, I'm clear, you know, that I'm a man and whatever that's supposed to mean. We're going to get into that, I'm sure, at some point. But I'm clear in a lot of ways the real leaders on this planet are women because she held it down when there was no help for her. you know. My mother came from the South, as I describe in the book. I talk about South Carolina, and it's really deep to me. Do y'all remember that mass shooting that happened in South Carolina earlier this year where folks were praying? Well, guess what? The pastor of that church is actually connected to my family. He went to the same church that my grandmother went to in South Carolina. You know what I mean? And so my mother grew up in America where there was segregation, where there were people hanging from trees or racial profiling, you know, where people were called all kinds of names like we see on Twitter and Facebook today, you know, where she was forced when she was 8 years old to pick cotton because there was no money in the household. It was four girls and one boy and a father and a mother in a two-room shack. I want y'all to think about that for a second. You know, I don't want to step on people's toes, but, you know, I realize that I'm privileged just standing here in front of you all. I'm privileged about the fact that I went to college. I think about where my mother came from. My mother ended up having to take turns going to school with her sisters because it might have been one dress. Sometimes they were so poor that they would pour syrup into a bowl and they would just pass that around and that was their meal. Are y'all with me out there? And so when I came into this library yesterday, I see all over Seattle, downtown Seattle, all these homeless sisters and brothers. I say, but for the grace of God, that could be me as well. You know what I mean? And so it doesn't matter if you have privilege. It's what you do with that privilege to help other people. We have a lot of selfish people out there, unfortunately, who only think about themselves and their careers and their resumes. But I never forget where I came from because my mother, as I describe in this book, and some of you have read it already, I talk about those stories. You know, how she had to quit her education in the eighth grade. There are young people right now who might be in the seventh or eighth grade sitting in this room who actually have gone to school, have gone as far in school as my mother. Does that mean she's unintelligent? No. She's probably one of the most intelligent people that I've ever met, but her education got interrupted because of racism, because of sexism, and because of classism. She was a poor black woman in America, you know? And her life was not considered valuable. Her life did not matter. Just like those 13 women who were raped by that white cop in Oklahoma, their lives didn't matter either. Are y'all with me out there? You know what I'm saying? And we're going to get into this tonight. You know, it's going to be from love, but we got to be honest about what's going on in this country. We got a lot of people that like to lie and sweep stuff under the rug, and they will just want to jump over to, well, we should all just get along. But guess what? You don't get a rainbow, which is what I want. I do want a rainbow, but you don't get to a rainbow unless you have that storm of a conversation. My mother migrated from the north, from the south part of me, to the north, looking for a better life, just like folks come from Korea or Vietnam or Mexico or Colombia, Guatemala. Y'all know what I'm talking about. People have come from Italy. People came from Ireland. People came from all over the world looking for a better life. She moved up north, and she met my father, and she fell in love with my father, and my mother thought he was in love with her, but he wasn't. My father was probably about a decade older than my mother, and he said all kinds of manipulative stuff that we sexist, patriarchal, misogynist men like to do. Y'all know what I'm talking about. And he got my mother pregnant, and then didn't even have the decency. When I was being born, my mother had to call a cab and take herself to the hospital. This is one reason why Gloria Steinem, who's considered the matriarch of the feminist movement, has always said, and I respect Gloria Steinem for this, she's always said that the real feminists in this country are black women. You know, the real womenists in this country are black women, because look at all the things that black women have had to survive. Think about this for a second. My mother has a grade school education. She's now having to raise a boy child by herself, the boy child that poet just talked about so eloquently in her poem. She's a teenager. You know, I just said to our DJ, Brother Mizell, when I was 15, 16 years old, I couldn't even imagine thinking the way she just articulated about black boys for myself as a black boy. You can't tell me that young people are not geniuses, which is why I asked you all to say, you're a genius, you're a genius, you're a genius. You know what I mean? Well, my mother now was forced to raise me on welfare, food stamps, and government cheese by herself. We were so poor, as I describe in the book. And what's deep for me, sisters and brothers, is people have been reading the book around the country. People have been in shock. Man, I didn't know. I didn't know your life. You know, people see MTV's The Real World. They see cover stories on Tupac and Vibe magazines. Brother Trey Maxey, thank you, Brother Maxey, wherever you are. Just thank you with all humility. Thank of Fannie Shakur for me. I love Miss Shakur. And we know that the spirit of Tupac lives. You know, Tupac lives. You know what I'm saying? And I try to represent that as best I can. My next book will be a biography of Tupac Shakur. You know what I mean? My mother, people are reading this book, And they're like, man, Kev, you telling me that the first 8 or 9 years of your life, you shared a bed with your mother in the bedroom, and your Aunt Kathy, who had a son that was 3 days older than you, born in the same year, shared a bed in the living room. I said, yeah, absolutely. You telling me that y'all lived in tenement buildings in Jersey City where you were born and raised, where there was rats, not mice, rats and roaches everywhere. Oh, yeah, we sure did. You telling me that your mama would go to the corner store and ask the grocery man, can he cut $1 worth of bologna and slice it thick enough so it could last a week? Oh, yeah. You telling me, Kev, that you had no telephone in your house until you were 8 or 9 years old? Oh, yeah, that's the truth. And so it trips me out when I meet people who say they're going to go do missionary work overseas to help, you know, people who need some help, but they don't want to go to the Central District in Seattle. You know what I'm saying? They don't want to help the United Hood movement in Seattle. You know, they think they got to go somewhere overseas to find poverty. I'm like, poverty is right all around you. But we see what we want to see. Some of the most uneducated people I've ever met in my life are people who have bachelor's degrees, master's degrees, PhDs, but they can't see what's right in front of them. That was me. We were dirt poor. I had one pair of shoes and one pair of sneakers as a child, as a kid. If you ran holes into the shoes or sneakers, you had to put newspaper or cardboard at the bottom of the shoe. And I'm from the East Coast, y'all, so you know that meant snow in the wintertime. And so there were many times when my feet were frozen because mama could not afford to buy a new pair of shoes for me. You just had it. Boy, you ran your shoes out. We're going to have to just figure this out. So poor. I remember going to a couple of friends' houses when I was a child. We had a black and white TV. You know the TV where you had to put the hanger in the TV to make it work? And then put some aluminum foil on the end of the, y'all know what I'm talking about. Some of y'all know what I'm talking about. We're not talking about some foreign land. We're talking about America. And people still live like this in America. They're called certain areas in Seattle or Detroit or New York or Oakland, you know.
You're listening to a talk by Kevin Powell at the Seattle Public Library on Speakers Forum, KUOW 94.9. Stay tuned for more after a quick break.
I'm 8 years old. I saw my father a couple
Welcome
times.
Back to Speakers Forum on KUOW 94.9 Seattle.
Let me
we
say
return
this.
To this talk and community dialogue featuring writer and activist
Kevin
Powell.
All these things happening in our communities around the country. I know there are good men
we'll
in this
return
world.
In a moment
Brother
with
Cortez
more from this recent
senior.
Community gathering and conversation featuring Kevin Powell. Stay with us for Speakers Forum, KUOW 94.9 Seattle. I'm John O'Brien.
We need men to show up in the communities, y'all. I saw my father three
You're
or four times.
You're tuned to Speakers Forum on KUOW 94.9 Seattle. We return now to the last part of our broadcast of a community conversation hosted by writer Kevin Powell.
The third time,
if you've missed any part of the program or want to hear it in its entirety, go to KUOW.org/speakersforum.
Gave me a little ride in a truck, took me to his house, and that was it. And then the last time, I didn't even see him, as I describe in a book, it's a rainy day. 8 years old, my mother wasn't even thinking about this. This is back in the day where there wasn't no going to court and stuff like that. She just would call and she would say very basically, can you help us? Can you help us? Can you help us? And we're at a drugstore on the phone. This is before cell phones, y'all, at a phone booth. And I could tell by my mother's body language that my father was saying stuff to her that she would share with me later. You lied to me. He's not my son. I'm not going to give you a near nickel for him ever again. He basically just kicked us both to the curb. I want you to think about that for a second. And he hung up the phone with my mother. I take very seriously all the young people. You want to know why I was standing over there, Brother Cortez, you know, when your group was there? Because I think about the fact that for the first 18 years of my life, I never had one positive male role model. Not one. You know, there's some young people that I've met out here in different parts of the country. Even if I can only speak for them for 3 or 4 minutes, I'm like, that's more than I ever got when I was a kid. You know what I'm saying? And so we should not take for granted, gentlemen, how important it is, particularly if these kids don't have fathers, that you actually represent a father figure just by the fact that you're a grown person. And even if they're not your biological children, they're still your children. One thing Brother Maxie Tupac said to me when he was alive, when I was writing interviews with him for Vibe magazine, he said, all the people disrespecting me and dissing me need to understand that I'm their child. That hit me in the core when Tupac said that. because Tupac's father was not there either. My mother is devastated, as you can imagine. I look like my father. You know what I mean? And he's saying, ain't my son, you know? And because there was no Oprah for my mother, there was no Dr. Phil, there was no Ellen, there was no Ayanna Van Zandt, there was no therapy or counseling or healing circles or sister circles, she basically had to suck it up. This is why Gloria Steinem said black women are the most powerful feminists on the planet. She had to suck it up by herself and raise this child. And I was bad, as I describe in the book. I'm angry. Mama took out some stuff on me. It took me years to forgive her, but I realized at a certain point when I began to go through my own healing process, like, man, you got to forgive your mama because she did the best that she could under the circumstances. We were surviving, y'all. I went to 4 grammar schools, 3 high schools. We moved around so much. I'm an only child. This is one reason why I know how to relate to all kinds of people, but it's also a reason why I can also be a loner. Because you somewhere at one school, you're in one neighborhood, and then the next thing you know, you move somewhere else. Y'all feel what I'm saying? I'm angry because we're poor. I'm angry because we're eating the same food all the time. You know what I mean? People know me now, I'm a vegan. I mean, I have this whole different lifestyle, but man, growing up, I just thought all we had was rice. I was like, we're just eating rice again and some kind of meat, you know? Why am I sharing this with y'all? I'm sharing this with y'all because we tend to talk about the super wealthy in this country, and we talk about the middle class, but people don't like to talk about the working class or poor people. Well, guess what? Kevin Pound, with his 12 books and all the stuff I do on TV and radio and all the stuff around the country and overseas, I see the world through the eyes of poor people for the rest of my life. I'm going to forever speak on behalf of poor people, just like one of my heroes, two of my heroes. Bobby Kennedy spoke about poor people at the end of his life. He was a wealthy Irish-American brother who could have just been like, you know what, I'm good. But he started talking about oppression and racism and white supremacy. And Dr. King was born into the black elite in Atlanta. But what was he doing at the end of his life? Organizing a poor people's campaign. You know what I mean? We are hypocrites, y'all, if we celebrate Christmas and we don't think about Jesus, who's symbolically supposed to be what Christmas is about, even though we know that was constructed. That's fake. Let's be real about it. If you really read, you know that. We know that. We're in a library. We're supposed to read, right? Where would Jesus be? Right with the homeless people in Seattle, out there in the cold while we're in here comforted. Where was Dr. King at the end of his life? With sanitation workers in Memphis, Tennessee. This brother with a PhD, this brother who won a Nobel Peace Prize when he was 34 years old, this brother who could have done anything with his life, he began to say, what does it matter that you can sit anywhere on the bus if you ain't got no money to get on the bus? What does it matter that you can sit at a lunch counter if you ain't got no money to buy a sandwich? He started talking about economic justice. Economic justice. Are y'all with me out there? Economic justice. Do I want to go back to the poverty that I experienced when I was a child that I described very vividly in this book? No. I don't want to go back to the rats, the roaches, the holy shoes, the hunger that I felt. You know, I don't want to go back to any of that. But I'm also not going to allow myself to be separated just because of some privilege, some fake privilege from people who are out here struggling, you know? So this is the stuff that I talk about in the book, and but for the grace of God, it could have been me. I'm standing here because of my mother with her grade school education. I'm so clear about that, because you know why I wanted to do the event here too? There's a chapter in the book called The Library. When I was 8 years old, my mama took me to the library. And we walked through the heart of the ghetto over all kinds of drug paraphernalia, broken glass everywhere. Right? Broken glass everywhere. Piss, stains everywhere. But my mother said one day, we're going to go to the library. And she got a library card, and I got a library card. My mama likes to read the newspaper. She reads bits and pieces of the Bible. But as far as I know, my mama don't read no books. But she understood from the time I was 3 or 4 years old, y'all, this is why education is important, young people. My mother said to me from the time I was 3 or 4 years old, you're going to college, 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 you're going to college. This woman who had never set foot on a college campus. Why? Because we may have been poor financially, but we were not poor spiritually. And her imagination was rich. For someone to see possibilities for her son in spite of the circumstances speaks to a faith that is incredible. Are y'all with me out there? You know what I mean? My mother and education saved my life. I'm so clear about that. You know? So I want y'all to read the book. Take my email. Email me and let you know what you think about the book. If you hate it, you can say that. I don't care. It's cool. But I hope that the book can be a conversation piece. My other 11 books are irrelevant to me at this point because this is the one that I've wanted to write my whole life. You know? This is the one where I just said, man, because when you grow up in the ghetto the way I did, your reality is your block and a few blocks north, south, east, or west. That's it. I didn't get on a plane until I was 24 years old. If you'd have told me, Kev, you will visit all 50 states the way I have, I would have been, no way. That ain't going to happen to me, you know? I remember when I was in high school, y'all, I remember getting a letter from Puget Sound. That's the college here, right? And it sounded like it was on Mars. I was like, well, where's Puget Sound and where's Washington State at? And I was all confused. I'm thinking it's Washington, D.C., you know what I mean? But, you know, we're laughing, but then again, it's not funny because if you've not been exposed to certain things, because of your circumstances, you're going to be limited. I did know I was going to go to college, but I never even thought beyond New Jersey or the East Coast. What are we going to talk about tonight? I want to throw a few things out there to y'all. Racism. We're going to go through all of them. Racism. It's not just a white brother, a white police officer, wreaking havoc on 13 black women in Oklahoma, raping them, which is egregious. It's not just someone calling you the N-word. Oh, no. That's too easy. You know? It's not just racial profiling cases, even though those are out of control. Would y'all agree? When I was a youth and student activist, and I just want to correct some folks who keep saying, you know, since MTV and Vibe, no, actually before MTV and Vibe, I was an activist and a writer. You know what I mean? And so when I was a youth coming up in the 80s and into the early 90s, we dealt with so many racial profiling cases all over the country, it wasn't even funny. None of this is new. We got to stop acting like it's new. What is new is the fact that we have Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and camera phones to document this stuff. You know what I mean? We got to stop saying things like racial tension. Tension, if you know anything about words, the way I'm a writer, I know about words. Tension means something goes up and it goes back down. Now, let's call it what it is. It's called racism. It's called racism. Let's call it what it is. You know, does that mean that we hate people? No. Didn't I start this conversation saying we're all sisters and brothers? Are we all sisters and brothers? We're all sisters and brothers, right, y'all? But it means that if we're going to talk about race or gender or class or homophobia, we need to acknowledge power and privilege. Who has the power and the privilege and who doesn't, or who's the victim of someone's power and privilege? Are y'all with me for a second? And so when I think about racism, it means that here I come to Seattle and I'm looking at what's going on in Seattle with all the gentrification, where it makes it seem like the Central District barely exists anymore. You know, I think about the history of Seattle where, you know, and Brother Jossie, where's Brother Jossie? Yeah, he knows what I'm talking about. You know, we know that Native Americans were here thousands of years, just like Native Americans were in New York where I'm from. I mean, Manhattan is a Native American word. But racism means that you think that just because you've landed there, you've now discovered something that people were already there. Are y'all with me for a second? And so you then commit mass genocide of indigenous people over the course of time. You know what I mean? And it's mass removal, just like gentrification is removal. That's racism and classism and economic injustice. And people don't want to have that conversation, but guess what? I'm going to have that conversation. Because racism also means that you have to, now if you do that, it means that you have to teach racism in school. And young people, hear me clearly. If you go to school, be it public schools or you pay to be miseducated, it's called private schools. And they're still teaching you in 2015 that Columbus discovered America, that is a racist lie. If you just celebrated Thanksgiving and people telling you about, oh, how the pilgrims and the Native Americans came together. No, actually, the Native Americans, no. You're celebrating genocide. You know? Now, I love everybody. But I'm also going to tell the truth about this country, because what I've realized, because I have been to all 50 states in this country over and over again, every city you can name I've been to, I also realized that most of us have been grossly miseducated. We don't know anything about the country that we claim to represent. You know what I mean? When I hear people say things like, you know, they're trying to take our freedom, so we're going to take our country back and bring it back to the way it was and make America great again, the question begs itself, for who? Who are you talking about? You know what I mean? And that's racism, because it's about, look at the beautiful diversity in this room. White sisters and brothers, black sisters and brothers, Asian sisters and brothers, Latino sisters and brothers, Native American sisters and brothers. This is America, y'all. But your education should actually look like the room of people. You should be learning about the contributions of all people that are in this room. And you should also be learning about yourself. One of the things I say in my memoir, it's tragic to me that I went from kindergarten to the 12th grade and black history was a total of 2 pages in 13 years. Rosa Parks, Dr. King's Dream, Jackie Robinson, and maybe a few other things, and that was the totality of my black education. You wonder why I grew up a self-hating black person? I didn't know anything about black history. Nothing. I don't care if you're African-American, Irish, Jewish, Puerto Rican, Mexican, Vietnamese, Chinese. You got to know who you are. How are you going to come to the table of the human family if you don't even know what you're contributing to the human family? That's racism. You know? And so we do, to my white sisters and brothers who ask me this question all the time, hey, what can I do? There's a couple things. Because you understand power and privilege, just like, you know, my brother Cohen, who just left. One reason why he's one of my best friends, because Michael Cohen, who left, who helped to edit my book, was actually an educator, a school superintendent on Long Island, and he actually oversaw a school system that was mostly people of color, and he did battle over and over again as a white brother, as a Jewish brother, with white brothers and sisters who were resistant to diversifying the curriculum. Are y'all with me for a second? Who were resistant to seeing these young people of color as human beings. But because Brother Michael understands white supremacy and white privilege and white power, and he's an ally in the truest form, he fought it and he fought it and he fought it and he challenged it. That this is unacceptable. So that's what you do. You raise your voice up if you know there's an injustice. You know, you don't stay silent, because as Audre Lorde said, your silence is agreement. You know what I mean? There's a lot of us who like to use the term intersectionality of oppressions. Well, if you're a white feminist, I'm all with it. I'm a pro-feminist man. But it's really deep to me that I barely heard any white feminist talk about these 13 women who were raped by this white police officer. But they have all this stuff to say about Bill Cosby, which you should, because he is a monster. But this white man in Oklahoma, this police officer who raped these 13 women, black, is also a monster. So you can't be selective in what you're offended by. You can't be selective in what oppression you're going to choose to align yourself with. Either you're for justice and equality for all people, or you're not. Racism. And so if you don't know about America, you need to learn about America. Who are the indigenous people? The word Seattle is a Native American word. Do we even know that? As we represent it, it's like when I'm in Brooklyn. I love New York City. Everybody's like, where's Brooklyn at? I'm like, but no one knows what Brooklyn even means. We're celebrating Seattle, but do you even know that Seattle is a Native American word? Do you even know the name of the indigenous people that are a part of this community? You know what I'm saying? And those of us who are massive sports fans, I'm a huge sports fan, but there's absolutely no way I would ever celebrate a sports team called the Cleveland Indians, the Atlanta Braves, the Washington Redskins, anything that's disrespectful to my Native American sisters and brothers. Because that's racism. being perpetuated over and over again. You know, racism is power and privilege, the dominant group thinking that they are superior, and then the rest of us walking around calling ourselves minority. You ain't a minority. You a person of color. You know, I'm an African person. I'm real clear what I am because I read and I study and I travel. And it's not an egotistical, I'm humble. As my people down south say, I'm humble. We ain't got the H. I'm humble. You know what I mean? But I refuse to ever go back to the black boy that I describe in that book where I was so self-hating and self-defeating because I didn't know anything about myself. Racism. So y'all got to raise your voices, white sisters and brothers. But people of color here, y'all got to raise your voices too because you can't afford to internalize the racism. Whenever I hear a person of color say stuff like, well, we just do this and we just this way, I'm like, do you know all the people in the community, all around the country? You know all of them? You know, you're participating in it. You actually are basically saying that you agree with this system that's teaching you to marginalize yourself. You know, when you hear us saying stuff like good hair and bad hair in 2015, you should be happy you got some hair. Because any hair is good hair. When we're still disrespecting people because of their complexion, their nose, their lips, etc., and we're thinking that there's one standard of beauty, that's the only standard of beauty. Y'all know what I'm talking about. No, everybody's beautiful. That's racism, internalized. But we're not going to stop with racism. Sexism. I mean, someone came up to me and talked about, you know, I do a lot of work, and I was like a lot of us men out here. I mean, men, let's be real about it. All men are sexist. Right, ladies? Y'all know. My mama says it all the time. You know, she can do bad. And every generation of women I've ever encountered know that phrase. You know what I mean? When they founded this country, quote unquote, they said all men are created equal. They ain't saying anything about women. You know? And Sister Thompson and other sisters are going to speak and talk about this, but I just want to say this as a male ally. Gentlemen, you know, we got power and privilege just because of our gender. You know what I mean? And we need to understand that. I didn't understand that growing up, because just like I didn't learn anything about black history growing up, what did I learn about women from K through 12? Betsy Ross sold a flag, and then here we go back to Rosa Parks. Yeah. And that was the totality of the contributions of women on the planet. Meanwhile, the most dynamic women in my life were my mother, my aunties, and my grandmother, but I didn't even realize, wait a minute, they represent female power. College, I might have studied one woman author, Zora Neale Hurston, The Eyes of Watching God. And you wonder why many of us men and boys engage in destructive behavior. It ranges from calling women and girls all kinds of disrespectful names, or as I describe in a book, at a certain point in grade school, running around grabbing girls' body parts. Y'all know what I'm talking about. We see women and girls as two things, most of us, caretakers or sexual objects. Y'all with me out there? I know some of us don't want to hear this, but it's the truth. How are you going to disrespect half the world's population? Women and girls are our equals, 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 are our equals. I don't care what anyone says, I'm saying it. I'm a Christian, I go to church. The only reason why I go to the church that I go to is because women and girls are treated as equals. There's no white Jesus perpetuating racism. And my LGBTQ sisters and brothers are welcome in that church as equals. Those are my three criteria. No white Jesus, women and girls are equals, and do not denigrate LGBTQ sisters and brothers. Intersectionality, y'all feel me? And so, men, what I'm saying to you all out there, us, as we talk about these issues tonight, I'm going to wrap this up as quick as possible, but one out of four women and girls in this country are the victims of some sort of sexual violence in their lifetimes. One out of three on the planet, which means over 1 billion women and girls on the planet. So even if you're not the kind of man or boy who would ever call a woman or girl some disrespectful name, grab her without her permission, touch her without her permission, pardon me, engage in the foul behavior we see on college campuses all over the country or in the community, do any of those kind of things, God forbid, rape. You should see the emails that I get from women and girls. Women who have to sleep with guns or knives under their pillows, women who's been set on fire while they were asleep by their mates. Y'all know what I'm talking about, you know? Even if you're not the kind of man who would do any of that stuff, and God forbid, murder, which has increased in this country, your intimate partner. But you have men and boys around you, in your fraternity, in your organization, on your sports team, in your synagogue, your masjid, your church, whatever it is, who engage in any behavior that is destructive to women and girls, and you fellas say nothing about it, we, you, us, become just as guilty. Yeah, we do. Yeah, we do. And then what we try to do as men, we'll twist it around and say, well, what, how about how these women are acting? Well, Brother Trey Maxey, let's bring it back to Tupac for a second. We know that Tupac had his contradictions, but there's something important that I need to say here. When you listen to the lyrics of Dear Mama, he said of his mother, even when you were a crack fiend, you were still a black queen. And what he was essentially saying is, I'm not here to judge you. I still recognize your humanity as a powerful human being that is known as a quote-unquote woman. Are y'all with me out there? But a lot of us, my God, I couldn't even imagine being a woman or girl in these times with all these destructive images through the mass media culture. Videos, reality TV shows, it's everywhere. So fellas, just how I challenge us around race privilege, we as men around gender privilege, male privilege, whatever you want to call it, y'all got to speak up. Y'all got to say something. If you don't know what to do, you don't know what to read, their names are Bell Hooks, Audre Lorde, Eve Ensler, Gloria Steinem, you know, read. Read. And question and challenge. And start changing your vocabulary. Stop saying he for everything. How about she or he or they? If you want to just be neutral about it. You know what I'm saying? But we're not going to stop at gender. The class issue. I talked about it earlier. But this is obscene to me. As I've been listening to people talk about Seattle, I feel like I'm back in New York City. I love Brooklyn, New York, but Brooklyn has been gentrified out of his mind. You know what I mean? There's a land grab going on all over the place. And people who are working class or middle class, because middle class, you're just a few checks away from being working class, basically. People are being pushed out. And where are people being pushed out to? Because folks want to come into the city, so people are being pushed to the suburbs. You ask the people in Chicago. Where are they supposed to go? And so when we talk about class issues, y'all, you know, the challenge is, one, you need to know the economic system that you live under. Most of us have no working knowledge of it. You know, we get caught up in it as consumers from Thanksgiving to New Year's. We spend tons of money most of us don't even have. One thing I like to say now, I'm fond of this word. I am frugal, cheap. I'm cheaper than ever because I realize it's a game. You know what I mean? Buy as if your value, your self-worth is tied to material stuff. The kind of car you have, the kind of jewelry you have. And you can't take any of this stuff with you. But you get caught up in it, and then you wonder why most of us are in perpetual debt our entire lives. And if you're poor, you're dependent on the government your entire life. Are y'all with me out there? And so when we talk about this class issue, I really want to challenge y'all. Y'all go to a Dr. King program in January. Y'all should ask whoever's organizing that Dr. King program, how come we only talk about Dr. King up to the I Have a Dream speech? How can we go to him from 1965 to 1968 when he was talking about economic justice and a radical redistribution of wealth? How can we don't talk about his Vietnam War speech where he's condemning war, just like Brother Tupac did in Keep Your Head Up, we got money for war, but we can't feed the poor or the homeless in Seattle and other places. Like there's no housing for these homeless people, but you got all this fancy stuff going on around them. Y'all feel me? Like they're invisible. And so classism is real, y'all. You know, when I hear people say things like, you know, Brooklyn's gotten so much better, my question is, for who? You know what I mean? Or look at all these great restaurants, but the restaurants in Brooklyn don't even hire the young people who live in the community in Brooklyn. Classism. Y'all with me? But we can't stop there. You know, one of the things I asked DeVita, because this is so important, the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer community. A lot of folks, Brother Kevin, I've actually had people say to me, Brother Kevin, you need to leave that gay stuff alone. I'm a heterosexual, cisgendered man. Okay, I'm a straight dude, quote unquote. But one of the things I realized as I was beginning to understand patriarchy, sex, and misogyny, hey man, you also got to deal with this issue of homophobia. You know what I mean? I was watching a video last night where this so-called black leader was going off on LGBTQ people. You know, calling it a mental illness and all kinds of stuff. And I said to myself, if that's the case, then Audre Lorde was mentally ill. James Baldwin was mentally ill. Billy Strayhorn, who created all those great songs with Duke Ellington, Duke Ellington's writing partner for decades, he must have been mentally ill. Y'all feel where I'm going with this? You know? And my thing is, like, they are and have been and have always been a part of our community. Always. I'm just going to say this in very simple terms. About 10 years ago, Mayor Ras Baraka, he's the current mayor of Newark, New Jersey. His father was the late, great writer Amiri Baraka. Ras's youngest sister, Shawnee, was a lesbian. Shawnee's, their older sister, was in a domestic violence situation that was terrible with the husband. It gets better, y'all. The husband was actually a community organizer about the people, quote unquote, whooping on the older sister. Shawnee and her partner, Rayshawn, went to the house one day because they didn't think anyone was there because Shawnee would stay there periodically. She went to retrieve her stuff. Long story short, this man happened to be there, and he shot Shawnee dead, and then he shot dead Rayshawn. It was the saddest funeral I'd ever been to in my life. Two women, because they were women and because they were lesbians, dead because of hatred. And one of the things I thought to myself, and by that time I had already been someone who was speaking out as an ally to the queer community, to the LGBTQ community, for the rest of my life, I don't care what anyone says, I'm going to challenge that kind of hatred and ignorance. You know what I mean? And so when we talk about why we're here tonight, I just want to put it out there because I know folks have their own organizations, they have their own agendas, you know, and I get it. I'm an organizer. I've been doing this for 30 years. And some of us, it might be race. For some of us, it might be gender. Some of us, it might be, you know, community issues around our sexual identity. I get that. And you should be about what you're about, but I also want us to take a leap forward and think about folks who might be different than us that are sitting in this room. Can we do that? You know? Because I really feel what this world really needs more than anything else is love and peace. But we also need to start to talk with each other and listen to each other. And if we don't agree, let's disagree civilly, you know, with some respect and some love. Because I don't know about y'all, but I'm sick and tired of going around this country and seeing people just fighting each other over stuff. I'm sick and tired of us scapegoating people because they might be Muslim. Because we know today it's Muslims. It used to be black people, or it is black people, or it's Latino people, or it's immigrants, or it's Jewish people. Y'all know where I'm going. In this part of the country, Chinese exclusionary laws. Y'all know what I'm talking about. You know, Japanese people being put into internment camps during World War II. Y'all know what I'm talking about. You know, women historically, gay people, lesbian people, transgender people historically, you know. And so we got to really think about how we are going to go forward and what this country is going to look like and what is your role going to be in it. And some of us may not want to hear that, but I'm going to keep saying it anyway because we got to change this country and we got to change this world. You know, we do a disservice to the people who sacrificed for us to get to this point if we just sit here and allow the right wing, those fascist, racist, sexist, homophobic, right wing people to be more organized, which they are. Because we on the other side don't even know how to talk with each other or listen to each other. And we fighting each other. That's what I see all over the country. So I want to open the floor up. Brother Jossie, come on up. Sister Thompson, come on up. Sister Farr and some other folks. And we're going to have a conversation. The folks are going to share, and then we're going to pass the mic around in the audience. Is that cool? Yeah. All right, let's do it. Come on, let's give them a round of applause. So whoever wants to speak first, just speak. Whatever's on your heart. One thing, if I could say one thing, though, we don't have a lot of time, and let's not assume we can solve every problem in an hour, because we can't. And so try to keep it succinct. What does Shakespeare say? Brevity's the soul of wit. Make it mad short. That's the Brooklyn translation. Keep it mad short, son. You know what I mean? All right? But I will ask folks up here and out there, think about action steps and solutions, at least one that people can take with them from here. All right? Anyone? Oh, I thought we were starting up here. Can we start up here first? If you don't mind. Is that all right? But you'll be the first person from the audience. I apologize.
I just want to start by saying thank you to Kevin. That was a great message.
Thank you.
I'm so glad to hear it tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. You don't want to say anything else? You good?
That's good for now.
Okay.
I'm sure I'll pipe in later.
All right.
Brother. I know we haven't officially met, but I want to say that was...
Appreciate it.
Yeah. A lot was going through my head at the time when you
were... Well, I'm about to fall off the stage. So.
That's for you.
I don't want to sit down.
Well, I mean, Connie's going to be commenting.
I don't want to sit down, though. I'm going to walk around. You can sit down. You old. How old are you?
17.
She's old. 17 is old. Yeah. 40-something is the new 30. I don't know.
Just want to thank everybody
You're
for 42? Coming.
That's crazy. I'm sorry.
Now what are you wanting us to do right here with this microphone?
Introduce yourselves again. It's what's on your mind, you know.
So I'm Nikita. I do poetry, but I also am a community organizer. I also am really thankful for your message, but really thankful for the way in which you overlapped issues of class, gender, and race, because I think it's very easy for us as organizers to get caught up in whatever circle or group we're organizing with. Thinking about Seattle, something I would like to see us enter into more of a conversation about is how we engage, in particular, in anti-blackness within communities of color, because it's very easy here where we're 30% various Asian communities and only 7-10% black to other each other in a way that feeds into the institution in one way and then in another way marginalizes us. So I think that would be a conversation I would like to see us start having more of in these spaces.
Justin.
Peace, everybody. Is this on?
Yeah.
Peace.
On. Peace, brother.
My name is Jossie Ross. I'm from the Blackfeet Indian Reservation in Browning, Montana. And I'm also from the Suquamish Indian Reservation, which is right across the water, who Chief Sealth was a member of.
That's right.
And we sit on Duwamish land, for you folks who do not know that. We're on Duwamish ancestral homelands, and Kevin kind of alluded to this in 1856.
Yes, sir.
One of those exclusionary acts. The original Battle of Seattle was not WTO. It was an act by, at the time, the Seattle City Council to exclude all the natives out of the city.
Mm.
So this is literally the fishing lands of the Duwamish folks right here where we're sitting at right now, and it's always important
Say
to acknowledge where you're at.
Say this.
Thank you very much for the conversation, Kevin. Kevin's one of my buddies. He's one of the people I look up to a whole bunch.
I look up to you,
mentor.
Too.
And I know he probably wouldn't take it as such, but I do, whether you accept it or not, damn it.
Yes, sir.
I look up to him a whole bunch.
Well,
so, the conversation piece and the thing that strikes me most about Kevin's message, just generally, definitely this book, but just generally through his life, through his practices, is inclusion. Because I think a lot of times as people who consider themselves progressives, we have a tendency for back patting. We pat ourselves on the back a whole bunch. And there's a message that I like to take from Michael Cohen, the Jewish tradition, which is there's this notion called the 10th man.
Yeah.
The 10th man says, if 9 people agree, you have an obligation as the 10th person to say, hey, well, we need to think about something else.
Right.
And a lot of times, as people who consider ourselves progressive, we say, okay, well, we're crossing off this little, heterosexualism, this feminism, this racism. We're anti all that bad stuff.
Huh.
But what about poverty?
Yeah.
But what about inclusion? We have a breadth of people that we reach, but what about death? Why don't we reach into and find some new people and find real diversity, the stories that haven't been told?
That's right.
You know, there's always a usual suspect. Larry and I, my brother Larry was talking about my son. My son's 8 years old. He's the child of a doctor and a lawyer.
Mm.
He's native. He's native as hell. But that's not true diversity because he's also a child of privilege. There's a story that hasn't been told, and there's somebody who hasn't been exposed to opportunity.
Huh.
And that's what inclusion is all about, is opportunity. So I thank you for that message very much, Kevin.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hello, Leigh Jafar. I'm a student at Cleveland High School, involved in BSU, Poetry Club, the journal at my school. So I'm just very excited to be here and meet Kevin Powell.
I'm excited to meet you. You're the poet laureate.
Yeah.
Brought amazing words and things for me to think about. When you talked about gentrification, Central District, Yesler, that's a huge one. It's very sad to see that people are being pushed out of their homes for new homes to be built there. Places that people saw as their home, they're being pushed out. And I think that we need to stand up and be the voice.
That's right.
Saying that this is not okay. Our art programs are being taken away. Education's being taken away from these people. So I just think that we need to stand up and tell them that it's not right. Because like what you said, silence is consent. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
That's it for this broadcast of Speakers Forum. You can hear a full podcast of this event featuring author, entrepreneur, and activist Kevin Powell on our website, kuow.org/speakersforum. Kevin Powell and guests spoke at the Seattle Public Library on December 12th. Thanks to Amy Tweedo and SPL for our recording. Tune in again soon for more from Speakers Forum. Good night, and best wishes for a happy new year.